Welcome to Lawmen, a podcast about local legends and obscure curiosities from days of yore. I'm Alistair Beckett-King.
And I'm James Shakeshaft.
This is a lockdown-appropriate episode because we are talking about the plague village of Eam.
Ooh, Eam.
We must travel to Eam, young one.
Eam.
It's a really hard word to say dramatically. I'm going to try again. The plague village of Eam.
The plague village of Eam.
With special guest Ross Brierley.
Ooh, I like it when we have a guest. Sometimes they bring gifts.
Three, two, one. That was nice. And you were perfectly in sync from my point of view, but probably not your own.
I was to say, from my point of view, James was way out. But that's...
That's the magic of internet.
What if one of us seemed to clap before you?
you could easily do that and really undermine my sense of reality. So, James, hello, how are you?
I'm all right, actually, thanks very much.
Are you having a nice time?
Yeah, lovely time. I've been out into the wild recently. Went to a park yesterday.
Yeah, just doing a little bit of foraging for food? Staking out your territory?
Yeah, well...
Urinating in a circle?
That did happen. That was unrelated, but when you gotta go, you gotta go. And there's no public toilets at the moment.
Well, on the subject of public urination...
Yes.
We've got a guest on the show. That's a really unfair introduction. I have no basis for that. But I would like to introduce our deputy law person to you, James, who has, as far as I'm aware, no history of public urination. It's Ross Brierley. Hello, Ross.
Hello, Ross.
Hello. Hello, hello.
I'm really sorry I introduced you like that.
That's absolutely fine. I've definitely had worse.
When was the last time you urinated publicly?
The funny thing about this was it was genuinely yesterday. So as I went for a walk around what is it called? Some sort of beacons in North Yorkshire and got caught short down a winding path. Which is also the title of my folk album released next week.
I really hope that you can somehow dig yourself out of this urine-stained hole that we've put you in.
For the last time, James, it's called Leeds. Just call it Leeds.
It is. It is absolutely a urine-stained hole. When you asked me to be on this podcast and said we prefer it if people talk about something from... where they are from originally or where they grew up, and you said, I assume that is Leeds. I was deeply insulted.
Did I offend you? I'm so sorry.
I threw my phone immediately into the puddle of urine that I just created.
Marking the phone as yours, naturally.
Yeah, absolutely, just in case any...
to ward off thieves.
Any passing dogs wish to check Twitter or order a Deliveroo. To the Peak District.
Listeners might know Ross is a powerhouse of alternative comedy in Yorkshire and putting out loads of lockdown content. Is that the word we use? Content?
We're all content creators now, Alistair.
We are.
We're no longer human beings with real feelings. We are mere cogs in a machine.
It is all about the content. But I was wrong in thinking that you were from Leeds. Where are you actually from?
Well, I tell people I'm from Sheffield because my entire family are from Sheffield. But to be fair, I did grow up in Dronfield Woodhouse, which is a lovely little suburb. Once the largest housing estate in Europe.
Ooh.
Oh.
Ooh. But no longer.
Was it made of wood?
Did it get smaller or did another one get bigger?
Or did a wolf come along and blow it down?
That's it, yeah. It briefly, for 6 to 7 hours, the largest housing estate in Europe.
After the old the straw one got blown away. And
absolutely. And then, but we still cling on to that that slight claim to fame. It's slap bang in between Sheffield and Chesterfield. So, as I explained to Alistair yesterday when I was mortally offended by the Leeds comment, if you don't claim Sheffield, then people will then assume that you are from the Chesterfield side, and no one wants that.
My dad is a very, very tanned man. He spends all his time in the garden, and I've taken to referring to him as the human Chesterfield. He looks like he's made of leather.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, Chesterfield, the name Chesterfield conjures up both leather sofas and cigarettes, which is quite the combination, isn't it?
That you've just described my dad.
Are you saying he looks like a leather sofa smoking a cigarette?
Yeah.
This is your dad, Jimmy Shakeshaft, East End gangster.
Yes. Yeah, Jimmy Shakeshaft senior.
Yes. Are you Jimmy Shakes junior?
I think I'm actually Jimmy Shakes the second, because my granddad was the original Jimmy Shakes.
Wow. Wouldn't that make you Jimmy Shakes the third?
Junior.
I mean, I'm not the king of counting, but wouldn't that make you the third of the Jimmy Shakes?
I don't know.
Can you adjudicate on this, Ross?
Let's have a think. No, it would make you that, because Queen Elizabeth II is the second.
But she's not Elizabeth Junior.
That is true.
Yeah, that is, yeah, fair enough.
I'm pretty certain that makes you JS3.
Don't insult JS3. I think they're a K-pop band, and they have a very, very feverish fan base. So they will find this podcast, and they will take you down. Much like Jimmy Shakeshaft's The Top Dog.
Jimmy Shakeshaft, yeah. Eastern Gangster, yeah. He will take you down.
Yeah.
When I was younger, it was Jimmy Shakeshaft was granddad, Jim Shakeshaft was dad, and I was James, and the dog was Jamie. And then, presumably, now granddad's gone, my dad became Jimmy. So I guess right. I'm technically Jim.
Does that mean you've moved up to the dog's position?
I think I'm past the dog.
Was there a ceremony where you rose in the ranks and your dad took on the mantle of Jimmy Shakeshaft senior?
They called it the Jimmining.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
What I like about this is, and I hope you don't take this as a criticism of your name, James, because I know people in stupid name glass houses shouldn't throw stones. But I like the way, having hit upon the name Jimmy Shakeshaft, your family went, right. We'll stick with that.
It's not going to get any better. It's not going to get any better.
You can't improve upon perfection, can you? We'll stick with that name.
Also, it implies that if your father's full name or your grandfather's full name was Jimmy Shakeshaft, East End Gangster, it implies that Alistair Beckett King is also your role in life. So I like it.
Ross, I asked you about mysteries, folklore, strange things that relate to places where you grew up. You did suggest a story which seemed almost too timely as we continue to record our podcast in lockdown because of... is it the zombie apocalypse? I've forgotten which one it is.
I think it's the reign of Jimmy Shakeshaft.
It's just all Shakeshafts out there. Everyone's a James Shakeshaft.
Yeah, well, we've experienced the Jimmining and the true believers.
And now dogs called Jim and men called Jim walk side by side in a grotesque parody of God's plan.
Yeah, the rap Jim.
Stop bringing up hip-hop on the podcast, James. Yeah. No, I don't understand it. It's confusing. You began to tell me the story of a village, but I don't know if I'm going to pronounce the name of it correctly. Can I throw that to you, Ross, to make sure that it's correct?
I would like to throw it back and see what your interpretation is. Actually, I'm intrigued.
Well, it's spelt E-Y-A-M. Is that correct?
Ooh. Correct.
And so I naturally pronounce that, as any good-hearted person would, I am. Is that correct?
I mean, you are, but it's not.
I am.
I am.
It's very difficult not to argue in this situation.
is it pronounced I am? Am I correct? No. I am.
Yeah. I am.
So how is I am pronounced, quote-unquote, correctly by the people in the Derbyshire village?
It is, of course, the plague village of Eam.
Oh. The plague village of Eam?
Oh.
That's a good name.
It is. I mean, it's nominative determinism right there, isn't it?
You should have said the nice village of Eam.
I know of Eam.
You've heard of Eam?
My school, Chipping Norton School, did a production of the play Roses of Eam. And all these country boys did northern accents.
Wow.
It was summer else.
Can you give us a proper dabble? Could you give us a couple of lines from the play?
Something about, I'm a vicar and I'm upset.
What happens I've never heard of the play Roses of Eam.
Oh, everyone dies. Spoilers. Everyone dies.
I think that's also probably a spoiler for this podcast. Mm. I mean, it is called The Plague Village. Mm.
Yes, it's actually. Oh, just we, most of us. No, it was just one of us, actually. It was Graham at number three. He got the plague, and then we burned him.
You very rarely have a solo plague, do you? No. It's very much a sort of group activity. Mm.
How many people does it have to be before it's a plague?
Oh, that is a very good question.
What are the levels? It's sort of like tragedy, inconvenience,
plague. Straight after inconvenience, a couple of us in the house have got a slight chesty cough, the village is dead. That's the, but it is, as you said, obviously it is very apt at the moment, and it's almost quite quaint in a way, because the plague village of Eam was a village in Derbyshire, Eam, as we call it, up our way. And I mean, I first knew of it at school, because we had houses. I don't know if you had them where you grew up.
Yes, people in County Durham live in houses. Of course we do. Come on. I'm sick of this prejudice.
More huts, really, or a cave if you're lucky.
It's a circular hollow dug into the ground, and I'm proud of it.
I assume that, yeah, that you grew up in a circle of twigs and the shake shafts in a disused nightclub or something like that.
Full of what you think is leather furniture. It's just a family gathering.
DFS is a front for the shake shafts.
Don't sit on Grandad.
I was sitting in the window, officer. I didn't realise until it was too late.
So we had, at school, we were separated into houses, much like Hogwarts. It's very... Do you know when you start to talk about your own childhood, you start to realise the weirdness of some of it? And each house obviously had a colour, and we were also assigned a local...
tragedy. a nearby massacre. Or murder-suicide.
Well, that's the thing when you think about it, because there was four of them, and the other three were Chatsworth, home of a lovely, delightful house full of art and wonderment. Mm. Bakewell, which is fantastic for feeding ducks. Buxton, famous, of course, for the water. Mm. And Eam, famous for the plague.
Yeah, Buxton really came out of that well.
I was actually in Chatsworth, which I have very good memories of. They have I mean, if you're ever a child and...
I have been thinking about it.
Spend a weekend as a child, go to Chatsworth, go on the adventure playground at Chatsworth House. I mean, with my last dying breath, I'll be like...
Oh, yes.
I will remember that giant zip line rope swing thing. So I'm loyal to Chatsworth. However, I have vague memories of us, once we learned the true history of Eam, using it obviously as a stick to beat the people who were in the Eam house with. Little plague boys and girls, that kind of thing.
So what happened? And how long ago are we talking?
We're talking all the way back 1665, which, 5 past 5, as we know it now, when a piece of wet cloth was brought back from London.
So many great stories begin with a piece of wet cloth.
Absolutely.
London wet cloth, though. Oh, but it was expensive.
Was it from? London. How wet is it? It's really wet. Oh, yeah. With, like, proper London water in that. Yeah, yeah. Has it got fleas in it? It has, it's full of them. So a tailor ordered the wet cloth from London, and George Vickers, not nominative determinism, he was the tailor's assistant in Eam, he hung up the wet cloth to dry.
Why'd they order wet cloth if they're just going to dry it?
Some people don't appreciate a proper London delicacy.
Yeah. He's dried his London wet cloth.
We've paid a premium for that.
Yeah. Are you drying that cloth? I am. That was his catchphrase. I am. Whatever he was doing, whatever very unwise thing he was doing.
I was going to clap that, but it would really ruin the syncing of this audio. Yeah, so yeah, they hung out the wet cloth. It dried, and the fleas ridden with the plague from London escaped into Eam and spread merry hell around this tiny village, which is, if you go to Eam, it's, you kind of, I assume that back in the day there wasn't a small dual carriageway that you have to take a quite sharp right turn off. But you're kind of driving down a fairly normal road, and exactly as you would expect from a quarantined plague village, there is a strange turning that you can barely see, and you go weaving up a road and into the hills of the Peak District, and there you stumble upon Eam, the village. So it is very much as you would imagine it. And as the plague began to spread, havoc was unleashed on the village, and they took it upon themselves rather nobly to use hand sanitizer and wear masks when going to the supermarket.
Heroes,
absolute heroes.
I mean, it sounds like the beginning of The Thing, but with a wet cloth instead of a dog.
But it seems quite quaint, because when you actually read about it now, George Vickers, the tailor's assistant, much like James Shakeshaft, East End gangster, he was the first one to die in the village, and the total number of deaths was 260, which,
wow,
again, obviously is horrific, but given our current, I feel that also makes me feel how incredibly desensitized I've become to the current situation we live in now, where I'm like, 260, oh, that was yesterday. But
yeah.
But these things happen. But anyway, we're taking this into reality now, and I realize that this is, I'm changing the tone of the podcast, so I apologize.
That's the first time reality has come up on the podcast, and I didn't enjoy it at all, actually, remembering reality.
The reason why Eam is encased in history in particular is because they did take an incredibly noble decision to essentially quarantine the entire village. They set out boundary stones of the, you know, on the boundary of the village is where other villages around Eam would bring them supplies and food and things to keep them going in the village. And in payment, they would drop coins in tubs of vinegar because the vinegar sanitized the payment method. So therefore, they could have those transactions. And the
17th century contactless payment, isn't it?
Absolutely, it is, yeah.
Just putting your hand into a pool of vinegar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which I've tried a little, but they said you still haven't actually paid for that vinegar yet, so it's very confusing.
Let me try it again. Splosh.
Oh, do you have anything to dry my hands? I've got some wet cloth.
That's incredibly brave of the people of Eam.
Absolutely. And quite rightly, you know, they have been enshrined in history as noble people who took it upon themselves to not spread the plague into the surrounding villages.
Yeah, Chipping School did that play one time.
So their fame has spread as far as Chipping Norton.
Yeah.
The guy who was the real hero of Eam was the vicar of the local parish church, confusingly not George Vickers, who was the...
He'd be called George Taylor, I assume. Yeah. George Taylor's assistant. To hyphenate.
They were on a job swap for the week. It was very confusing.
It was the worst time it could have happened.
I smell a sitcom. The rector, it was Reverend William Mompesson, which is, again, a noble name.
That is a name to conjure with.
What was the Mompesson called?
Well, I'm quite intrigued, because obviously, you know, most names, you know, come from what our ancestors used to do, Mr. Shakeshaft. And
King.
Exactly. Brierly. No idea.
Bushes. Summit with bushes.
Geographic, I assume. Lee means field, and a briar is a briar. So that's what briar field.
So it used to be sort of what? I just was outside in the clearings.
Yep. If true, that was Etymology Corner. If not true, I'll edit it out of the podcast.
But yeah, so they introduced all those precautions and made the arrangements, and they were essentially, you know, the leadership that Eam needed in their time of need. And what we would give for a William Mompesson, I tell you.
So did nowhere else around had the plague then?
No, they essentially managed to quarantine it within the village, so it did not spread to surrounding villages, and they, yeah, essentially saved hundreds and hundreds of lives by sacrificing their own. Because, of course, people, if you've just been told there's plague in the village, you know, the house three doors down has plague, your immediate instinct would be to
drive to Durham.
To drive to Durham, absolutely. But luckily, the Reverend William Mompesson was there to say, no, back to your houses. They managed to save a lot of the surrounding villages while sacrificing literally whole families. And it's a strange phenomenon when you actually go to Eam, because the strange thing about this is that myself and fellow Northern alternative comedian as well, Sean Morley, took a visit to Eam last year. to have a wander around to, in theory, record a podcast. But I don't know which one of you two does the editing for this, but you're a better man than I, put it that way. And definitely forgetting to clap at the start was a terrible, terrible error on my part. But we went to obviously for a wander around, even to get the feel of it, and it was a bizarre, incredibly misty day. It was so perfect for the vibe. It's obviously quite strange now because people just live there normally. You know, we had a jacket potato in a delightful cafe in the Plague Village, and in particular, you know, the original Plague Cottage where the cloth was hung up has got, you know, like a plaque outside, and you can go and look at it, and it's just a normal person's house. It's just somebody living in there with their family with a plaque outside, and obviously people will regularly come and stand outside and go, oh, that's where the plague started 400 years ago.
Try and get them to sign their wet cloths.
The souvenir shop was full of wet cloth. It really was. But there's just signs. It's very strange. It's obviously, you know, it's a perfectly normal Peak District village, apart from the fact that you go, Mr. and Mrs. Browning and their entire family of seven or eight children perished in this house. And it's, as an estate agent, it must be a nightmare.
It's interesting that you mentioned the mist, because it's not without its fair share of ghosts, from what I hear, which is hardly surprising, considering the mass deaths that occurred there.
Presumably the graveyard is huge. Oh, it's very popular. The 1665 date was a very popular one for these gravestones. They must have run out of sixes.
Absolutely. Wonder what happened.
The author Tom Cox has a blog about going there to write. So he took a cottage there to write. And he described, it's interesting you mentioned it being foggy. He describes finding the fog in Eme extremely eerie. And he catalogues on his website the ghostly experiences, like the ghost of a cat he could hear in the walls, but he couldn't see. But that turned out to be a dog that was blind. Pictures fell off the walls, books fell off bookshelves, and a salt shaker moved. And there's a very lovely quote you can find on his website where he just writes, "Where there is ghosts," says a note in my journal made on one blizzard night. And I think "where there is ghosts" is a beautiful sentence. I'm sure he's better right than that quote suggests. But there are lots of ghosts. There's a ghost of Sarah Mills, who was a servant girl who fell into a well and is known to wander around. I am. Sorry, Eme.
You are not a servant girl, Alistair.
I am.
Although you do have the delightful locks to pull it off. That's true.
Was there also a girl called Sarah Wells who died in a mill?
It really was. It was a freaky Friday, I tell you. Yes, Sarah Mills, yeah. Who's apparently, I read on another blog, who's soaking wet apparition has haunted the hall ever since. So again, it's just wet things in Eme apparently are best avoided, I think.
Yeah. My wife's from Hayfield, which is near Eme, and I've been there quite a lot, and I'm not surprised that the moisture and wetness is a feature of all of this. It's the rainiest place I've ever been.
And Hayfield is home to mermaids. And what's wetter than a mermaid?
Three mermaids.
Yeah. The only thing wetter than one mermaid, apart from two mermaids, is three mermaids.
Ironically, we don't know. No, nature doesn't know why, but two mermaids are actually drier than three mermaids. No, one mermaid. But so, yeah, Sarah Mills haunts Eme Hall, which, again, if you walk through Eme, this is the bizarre thing about Eme. If you walk through, you're kind of down the high street, you're like, oh, that's a nice house. Oh, that's Eme Hall, you know, home of all the hauntings. It's just kind of, it looks like a posh hotel. And you can just pop in and visit. And it's also haunted. Eme Hall is also haunted by a man. The haunting is described as a man in an upstairs room where...
A ghost, hopefully, this man.
Well, we don't know. Well, I mean, maybe not at the time, because the description was that he brought such misery and despair that his room was permanently locked forever.
I have had housemates like that.
It's possible that he was, yeah, just a bit of a nuisance, and they thought, right, we're locking the door, he can't come out.
But he must have eventually become a ghost, at least.
You know, like some hotels kind of, or old pubs as well, put around ghost stories to try and drum up a little bit of custom. Do you think maybe that they were trying to create a ghost and he wasn't that bad? They just invited this bloke into their house and they're like, we'll lock the door and then he'll die, become a ghost. Brilliant, we've got a ghost. We've caught ourselves a ghost.
How do you catch a ghost? Kill a man.
I would have ordered one of those wet ghosts up from London. They're the best. Just have it brought in.
Absolutely.
I'd look at Westworld and Simpsons' Law of the Land to see if Eam had any entries. Thinking I was going to find some plague ghosts. Quite the opposite. I found Little Fairy Child from the village of Eam.
Wow.
Do you want to hear about the fairy child?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, the folklorist, S.O. Addy. That's so Addy. In his 1895 book, Household Tales, tells the story of a farmer's wife who was mixing up a pudding. And then the pudding started to jump around in the bowl and jump out of the spoon. And eventually it jumped right out and onto the floor as if it were bewitched. Reading from So Addy Now. As the pudding was rolling about on the floor, a travelling tinker came to the door and the woman picked the pudding up and gave it to him. So the tinker put it into his budget, which I think means bag, not just he didn't immediately open up Excel, and slung it over his back. As he trudged along the road, the pudding kept rolling about in the budget till at last it broke into pieces. When out came a little fairy child who cried, "Take me to my Dathera dad, take me to my Dathera dad." Now, Dathera is not a word, and no one knows what it means. S.O. Addy thinks it might be related to, an Icelandic word meaning wheedle. But that's a bit of a stretch, but it suggests the fairy father of the little pudding boy. The format of tale it belongs to is the runaway pancake.
What?
We all know and love the runaway pancake.
That's a genre.
That's a genre, yeah. Thriller, western.
The pudding chase movie.
Is it a sequel to Humpty Dumpty?
The Gingerbread Man is the most famous example of that type of story that we would know now, where the food comes to life. But in this case, it was a pudding.
What year are we talking there?
I think that was the olden days.
Ah, ye olden days, yeah.
That is a legend belonging to the village of Eam, but I don't think we know exactly when the pudding came alive and then said something to a tinker. I'm afraid I don't have that information.
I didn't notice the memorial plaque outside of the house noting the day the pudding came to life.
Yeah, as witnessed by this talking sandwich and an angry thermos.
Yeah. I think the mushrooms you baked into the pudding, Mother, may have been a different kind to what we were expecting. So it's not just ghosts in Eam then?
It's got tragedy, it's got a fairy child, it's got ghosts.
There are loads of other ghosts. There's a ghost in the play cottage, apparently, where the new owners of the play cottage heard some banging and shouting and clanging in the fireplace. So he lit a fire and burned holly. This was around Christmas time.
Bad news for holly, but fair enough.
But again, it's that Eam nominative determinism, really. Yeah. Coming back to kick her in the backside. A bundle fell out of the chimney, and he was so terrified by this happening, he refused to open the bundle and merely burned it on the fire, and apparently after that the shrieking and the hollering and the clanging stopped. So rumour has it was merely an Amazon delivery driver trying to drop off a parcel. There is apparently the stocks are haunted, unsurprisingly. I mean, they still have the stocks in the middle, opposite Eam Hall, in the middle of the high street. And I mean, if you're going to keep the stocks, you're going to get hauntings, aren't you, basically?
Yeah, keep stocks, get haunted. That's how it works.
Mm.
My favourite report was the man who ran the stables, who said that he would regularly see shadows and hear bangs and footsteps. I mean, I've not worked in a stables, but they add up to me.
I mean, there's a lot of legs in the vicinity.
There are. And the Miner's Arms, the local pub in Eam as well, which is curiously the name of the pub, my local pub when I was a kid as well, which is even weirder.
I don't think a child should have a local pub, but carry on.
But if a kid's going to go to a pub, it'll be the Miner's Arms.
And one of those little cup and ball games on the shingle.
The spelling did confuse me as a child, but yeah, you're absolutely right.
Peeking over the bar, the usual.
It's that nominative determinism problem.
It is. It was very confusing for all the gentlemen who came in covered in soot to be thrown out. This is not for you. But apparently the former landlord's wife of the Miner's Arms, who was brutally murdered there in the 17th century as well. It was a tough century, wasn't it? It really was.
That was a swift transition there between whimsy and brutal murdering.
It was. That's Eam.
Oh, I don't think I was ready for that.
That genuinely is Eam. Honestly, the right next to the plague cottage in Eam, the garden of the woman who owns the cottage next door is so chock full of trinkets and gnomes and tiny little things from gift shops.
Oh,
hundreds and hundreds of them. You've got that kind of view, and then next door is the Play Cottage. So Ian very much is a swift transition between whimsy and death. But apparently, yes, apparently the old landlady of the Miner's Arms haunts that the pub wearing a blue bonnet.
Wow.
I don't know if she's naked from the neck down, apart from that, but I guess the bonnet's the first thing you see.
I think it's time to do some scores for the village of Eam. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think so.
Ross, do you have any categories there on your parchment?
I have got categories to die for. Category number one, fine gentleman of law, has to be names. It's got to be names.
A classic category. Yes. Come on, James. You can't move for names. Literally everybody in the village had a name.
They did, definitely.
200 of them. Every one of them. And every one of their names was different to their job.
Yeah, and we've already been confused by the name of Eam, I am, Eam.
I am.
I think that's how you sort of break it down Latin-wise.
If you live outside the village, it's you are. Yeah.
I am, Eam, we Eam.
I mean, personally, I think it's got to score highly on this because it is... I mean, if it doesn't, that's 90% of the podcast that's ruined and a waste of time.
Exactly. Come on, conjugate yourself, James.
Yeah.
It's got to be a good score for names.
I think I would say... I think it's a 4.
We've been getting some messages from the tweets who are suggesting that during lockdown we've become too generous with the scoring out of presumably sadness and the delight that comes from the human contact of the podcast.
Yes.
Because I, in my heart, I believe this to be a 5, but I think you are pandering.
Mm.
Pandering to a vocal minority in the listenership who think we're getting lax with the scores. And I can tell that's why you've knocked one off this obvious 5.
Well, the thing, it's like in the football game, early on, you know, we're in the first 5 minutes and someone does quite a bad challenge, but the crowd gets on at the ref. He doesn't want to go in with a red. He doesn't want to spoil the game. So I'm going to say it's a 4 because it loses 1 point because of the Eam, Eam, I am.
That's the highlight. That's the highlight.
I cannot believe.
That's.
I can't believe that you've done this to William Mombison. Of all people.
I can't believe you tried to explain something to me using a football analogy.
I think I can. This is my last shot to win that point back. Here's a line from the Eam Wikipedia. That the measures introduced by William Mombison included the arrangement that families were to bury their own dead, and the relocation of church services to the natural amphitheatre of Cucklet Delf.
Ooh.
Now that's a name. I want to... Cook. That is a wonderful name.
Yeah.
He sounds like a leading libertarian to me. Cucklet Delf.
Cucklet Delf, James.
Yeah, I think... Although you're describing a lazy vicar. We've all used lockdown to get out of jobs we otherwise didn't want to do. Yeah, okay. You've worn me down. You like the players coming up and hectoring the referee in the football game. And he's reached into his pocket and he has brought out a red. It's 5 points.
Yes.
I've got confused with it as well.
I am the podcast equivalent of Roy Keane. No idea.
Don't understand that. Yeah. For the benefit of the listener, my face, it just looks like a blank magnolia wall.
It looks like the motionless painting of which I assume you emerged.
What's the next category?
The next category is, I mean, this was the most apt of all. I mean, names was obviously the dominant theme here, but I do feel that there was a large supernatural bent to the whole proceeding. So, the supernatural.
Ooh, supernatural.
You've got ghosts.
Yes.
You've got a little pudding doing a dance.
If this was on Broadway, it would say, ghosts, 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 and then featuring Little Pudding Boy underneath.
Yes. Starring George, Martha, and Jenny Ghost.
And like all 1950s films, Little Ghost Boy's voice would be dubbed over by an adult woman. And it's like really weird that that was considered normal at the time.
It was so it could get served in the Miner's Arms.
Oh, I thought it wasn't like a Jerry Adams thing.
He's also on Twitter, so you could tag him into the episode.
Is he?
Yeah, he posted a video of himself on Twitter on a trampoline. Times have changed.
If you told my dad now that that had happened, you have a very angry sofa on your hands.
He'd be smoking from every angle.
Just angrily sort of doing that, retracting into a lazy boy thing towards you. Ka-clunk, 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 ka-clunk. He's gradually approaching.
As if to go...
So
supernatural.
It's pretty spooky. Weather is Ghosts.
Weather is Ghosts.
Weather is Ghosts.
Weather is Ghosts. That's Tom Cox, the author of several published books, saying that. The fog has been witnessed by two witnesses. We've got three. We've got Tom Cox, the author. We've got Ross Brierley. And we've got Sean Morley, the Northern Alternative comedians.
Yes.
There was also, there's a fourth witness, as we did find one of those dog draft excluders that people have. In the middle of the road in Eam, and he was very traumatised by the whole proceeding. So,
ain't no drafts in the middle of the road. Pick a side. Pick a side's what I said to that draft excluder.
Okay, you've got a pudding child. I really like the idea of a live pudding. I like puddings, and I really like the idea that there's a funny little child in there. I'm not sure I do like that idea anymore. No, I've explored it. We've got a lot of potential for ghosts that doesn't happen, though.
Are you saying that 200 people have died and you want 200 ghosts? You want a 1-to-1 death-ghost ratio?
Or at least 100 ghosts.
2-to-1.
Is that too much to ask?
That would really ruin the tourism of Eam, I think, if everywhere was haunted. if the Jacket Potato Cafe was haunted, that might be a bit too much.
The little garden with the gnomes haunted. 9 ghosts cheek by jowl in that garden.
That is definitely haunted anyway.
It's absolutely 100% haunted.
It's haunting. But is it haunted?
Yeah, that's true. There was also I forgot to mention this, but there is a sheep roasting pit which looked haunted as well. So just throw that.
It's where all the locals gather around to make really sarcastic jokes at the expense of sheep.
Absolutely. And the best joke wins a wet cloth. The gates of the school at Eam have ringa ringa roses. And the actual thing, it's and children skipping. So, if you're a child in the School of Eam, you are constantly reminded about your ancestors' horrific death. So,
and presumably, the echoing sound of nursery rhymes being sung by children who can't be seen.
Yeah, exactly, that is very spooky.
You're not being reminded of your ancestors because they famously, the entire village died. You're reminded of why your ancestors got such a good deal on that property.
Fair.
A spookily good bargain, James. That's how supernatural this place is.
It's why Ofsted always, they just look, just give them a good report. I'm not going there.
It's 4. It is going to be 4. I liked that they tried to engineer their own ghost.
If it would have been a 3 if they hadn't got that extra ghost in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Category number 3, gentlemen, is sharp right turns. Not politically, admittedly, but that you have to take a rather severe sharp right turn into Eam. And I feel the swinging between whimsy and death is... it's disconcerting, to say the least.
I found it startling. I genuinely felt my heart leap at one point.
Yeah, from a dancing dessert to, plague-riddled families burying their own dead.
That literally is. It's gnomes, it's dancing puddings, it's come on, darling, we need to bury our sixth born. It's... grim. History is jarring, James.
And I do know the sharp right turn that you mean to get to Eam. It is... I would have been, had it not been for how poorly signposted.
I heard an F there. I heard a labiodental fricative. Is that the beginning of the word 5 or 4?
3. It's 3.
Oh, damn the accent of James Shakeshaft, East End gangster. You're fooling me.
3. No, I think it can't be more than a 3 because there's one literal sharp right turn, and then the figurative ones only add up to 2.
You drive a hard bargain. I regret buying that sofa from you.
Uncle Jim.
I regret buying one of your relatives. Well, I will enter 3 into the ledger for the category of sharp right turns.
Well, gentlemen, I have one more category for you.
Mm. Let's hear it.
This is what we're going to win. This is what's going to tip us over the edge. It is, of course, 3 letters. Wet.
Mic drop.
Yeah.
There's a lot of wet. A lot of wet in this story, James. A lot of wet. Eam is a damp and dank.
Yes.
Can you imagine the texture of that draft excluder that was in the middle of a road?
Yes.
Of a Derbyshire village. Can you imagine the waterlogged draft excluder dog?
Oh, yeah.
my only son. It's very wet, James. The whole thing is wet. The whole story. The story is dripping. Even the ghosts are dripping wet.
And weather is ghosts, and fog is literally moisture. That's all it is. It's just water that has got tired of lying around and pouring and decided to float.
Yes.
A cloud is the ghost of water. Fog is the ghost of water. Weather is ghosts. I've proven it. QED.
Rain is the ghost of clouds.
This has got very profound.
And what did Sarah Mills fall down?
Well done.
Yeah.
They're pretty moist.
I bet that George Vickers, though. Humid. Why did I order that wet London cotton?
Hindsight is 2020, James. It's easy for us to look back and think that ordering wet, flea-infested cloth from London during a plague was a bad idea. But at the time, it seemed perfectly reasonable. I'm sure you've made purchases you've regretted.
Oh, it's so wet, this story, though. And the area is so wet. It is
very wet.
It's sopping, this story.
In school, we would say satched, because we didn't have time to say saturated. So it'd be like, oh, it's satched. Oh, I got satched.
I haven't heard someone use the word satched for about 20 years. That really set off a brain firework. That really did. That was a memory I didn't know I still had.
Yeah. I think we've got a little bit off track. Wet.
Wet, wet, wet.
Wet, James.
Well,
it's wet. It's moist. It's damp.
Ring it out. It's a 5.
Yes.
Oh, thank you for bringing such a moist and tender story to us.
It really is my pleasure. You know, it's a shame I couldn't bring you something horrific about Chatsworth as well.
You never know. Think something might happen. Fingers crossed. It could happen in the next few weeks, and we'll get you back on. Is there anything you would like to plug? Are you succeeding in doing anything during this nightmare we call existence?
I was very much so for about 8 to 10 weeks. I was rattling out episodes of the Not So Late Show with Ross Briley, which is an online chat show / sketch show, which you can be found at the NSL show on various social medias and on YouTube. There's currently 5 episodes up there. There was supposed to be more. But I believe the term is burnout. It turns out that while trying to do 40 hours of creative work on your own in your dining room during a pandemic leads to somewhat of an energy drain. So please enjoy that back catalogue.
Please check that out. You did say the handle there?
Yes, at the NSL show. My personal handle is at It's Ross Briley, if you want to follow me for the occasional joke and musings about horse racing, which... I don't know how much of an audience crossover you have with myths, legends and lore and equine sports, but who knows?
We've had a few headless horses on this.
Really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The trouble is you tend to slip off the front with a headless horse.
Yeah. It makes braking difficult. Is it called braking on a horse?
Yes, yeah, yeah. Horses nowadays they've been bred to have ABS.
If you ride through a puddle too fast on a horse, the hooves lock up.
If you ride through a puddle too fast on a horse... There we go, I'm writing that down as well. This is my next album, is writing itself.
You've been listening to Lawmen, with me, Alistair Beckett-King.
And me, James Shakeshaft. Oh, fun fact, me and Ross have been kicked in the chest by the same person.
The person who kicked you in the chest, as previously referenced in the podcast, has also kicked Ross Briley in the chest.
Yes, yes.
What a crossover.
I know.
If you like this podcast, even a tiny amount, you can give us a good review, you can like, subscribe, send us a tweet, send us an email, or you can give us a couple of quid on ko-fi.com, ko-fi.com/lawmen. And thank you to everybody who's already done that.
Yes, it's incredibly amazing how kind everybody is. Thank you. Yeah, I'm rolling.
Me too.
Did you deliberately rolling there, James? Or was that just...
A little bit. Yeah, no, yeah. I did a little...
I liked it.
PJ and or Duncan...
You know, I don't think they get enough credit for inventing hip-hop.
Yeah. They had so many lyrics, they were actually frightened to use them.
They had major anxiety troubles. That was them trying to tell us that this is a cry for help.
Yeah. Are you saying that they were literally crazy cats in a mental health sense?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was they were really struggling at that time, but we were like, oh, the fun-loving guys. And like, no, this is I'm really dampening the pain through alcohol and Saturday night takeaways.
What ward do you see yourselves being on? Psych!